That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to Locked On Seahawks. I am Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman. Spike, today is our mailbag episode. It's the first one of probably many, I'm assuming. So how have you been preparing for it?
I tweeted about it twice and then have been, you know, really diving back into the deepest recesses of my brain in order to answer some of these questions.
Right. We got a lot of good questions and we're going to answer them as best we can. But if they're too weird, like I was saying on the last show, then I think I'll let you be the captain on that one.
I got this. Don't worry about me.
All right, so we'll get right into it, and this is a question from a friend of the show, Anthony Irwin, who's one of the co-hosts of Locked On Lakers. He asked, how many members of the Seahawks have never been in the sea? Spike, do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, the answer to that is four. Four current Seahawks have never been in the sea. It's Mark Lewinsky, DJ Alexander, Tyler Lockett, and Jeremy Lay. None of them have ever been in the sea. They've been in some large lakes, but never the sea. So I think to be the sea, I mean, I'm counting oceans, I'm counting any saltwater body when I say the sea. So, you know, take it from there. But none of those guys have ever been in a large body of saltwater.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, these are grown men, so it's it's funny to hear that I've been in the sea plenty of times.
Well, yeah.
So I can say I'm more experienced than some Seahawks in experience.
But that's the sort of great content question that we're getting from friend of this podcast, Anthony Irwin.
Exactly. And so we'll jump into another fun one. Is John Ryan the offensive MVP so far for the Seahawks?
Okay, so this question came from Churlo. And my answer to this, I get why this question is being asked. The answer is no, because we haven't seen the awesome John Ryan trick play that we're going to bust out at some point this year yet. And if that trick play turns into a touchdown, maybe the answer will be yes. But I get the question because, like, there isn't a great answer for who the Seahawks offensive MVP is this year. I mean, Russell Wilson has probably been the best player on the offense, but his numbers have stagnated as a result of the bad offensive line play. Justin Britt has probably been the steadiest member of the offense, but it's crazy to give the offensive MVP to any member of the offensive line. The best running back has been Chris Carson, but he's out for the year and is already, you know, missing games. In terms of wide receivers, or Jimmy Graham has had the most big plays, but he's also had the most big bad plays. And then Doug Baldwin's been our steadiest option, but he's been dealing with injuries and hasn't really gotten in the end zone much. So there isn't a great answer as to who the offensive MVP is. John Ryan is dominating with his punts so far this year. It's been a good resurgent for a punt unit that was pretty down last year. So I get why that question has been asked. That said, we need John Ryan to get on the board with a touchdown if he's going to get this mantle.
Right, and look terrified while doing it. And another question that stems from that I just came up with right now, who would be this year's Gary Gilliam in that case?
That's a great question, and I think that it's going to be Mark Lewinsky. We just got, you know, he's a guy who, A, hasn't been in the sea. B, we just got news that Luke Joeckel, who was supposed to be out for only 2 weeks, is going to be out for 4 to 5. Glowinski and Posick are going to be splitting snaps there. Reminds me a lot of Gilliam's first year getting snaps on the team. So it's either Glowinski. It could be Matt Tobin, as I believe Gilliam was playing some sixth offensive line that year. And Tobin's been coming in to do that. So my most likely answer is Glowinski. My second most likely answer is Matt Tobin. Two guys who you definitely want getting receiving touchdowns for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, like this is completely unrelated to the question, but Matt Tobin sounds like a name like he'd be in Nickelback or something.
That's so real. Oh my God. Yeah, he's from Idaho. I know that about Tobin. So yeah, he's not like a Southern rock guy. He's definitely in, I think it's like a Christian grunge band is the sort of band that he would be the bassist in. And he's probably the most accomplished musician. And there's probably like a creepy dude in the band, but it's not Matt Tobin. And like, you know, it's going to get blown up on Stereo Gum that like the keyboardist, because like, why does this, you know, heavy grunge band of a keyboardist, that guy's like done something awful, but Tobin will be like, yeah man, I'm just a bassist, I do it.
The creepy dude's definitely J.R. Sweezy, but we're gonna
oh my God.
we touched on how Russell Wilson has probably been the best player for the Seahawks offensively, but the numbers haven't really been there. And Ben Baldwin asks us, chance to trade Russell Wilson during their bye week, will Seattle do it before the San Francisco game or wait until after the season?
Yeah, so for me, I think they have to trade him to San Francisco, let him run that Kyle Shanahan offense, free him up to do that. And meanwhile, the Seahawks can sign Colin Kaepernick, and then we can run the Colin Kaepernick destroys Russell Wilson streams offense, where he just like scampers past defenders, but in the end we end up losing that on a tipped interception by Eric Reed, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know who plays corner for the Niners right now.
Oh my gosh, that's
who do they have there?
That's a whole different mailbag for that. I mean, we said there was nobody in the Colts secondary. I mean, but like we know Eric Reed and Jimmy Ward are the safeties, but who are their cornerbacks?
I don't know.
That's a mystery. That's a whole nother podcast. That's for when we play the Niners next.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you have an answer for that? I mean, do you think I'm right? Do you think, what are you thinking?
Well, I think it'd probably be best to just wait it out during the season, because like we said, his numbers aren't really there right now. So, you know, let him build back up his numbers and let him throw a few touchdowns, rush for a few yards, and really build up his trade value. Then we can get a Herschel Walker type return.
That's a great point. Russell Wilson's trade value has ebbed a little, and you gotta wait it out.
Right. So I'm doing some investigative research right now, and I'm finding out that, well, I typed in 49ers cornerbacks, and they it came up with Tremaine Brock and Chris Culliver, which are two players not on the roster right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what those were definitely the first two names that popped into my head. But Tremaine Brock, Seahawks legend.
But their cornerbacks are Rashad Robinson. Oof. And Kawan Williams. Oh, Akello Witherspoon. I know that was a guy that
a lot
of Seahawks Twitter wanted.
That's right.
And Leon Hall. I haven't heard that name in a long
time. Oh, Leon Hall on the... Weird. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a good group.
And I'll say that we watched them hold the Seahawks to like 12 points, so we should know at least one of their cornerbacks' names, but we don't. So.
Right, and one of our cornerbacks is Richard Sherman, and Seahawk asks, will Richard Sherman be traded prior to the 2018 draft? I'll answer this first. I really don't want him to be. I really don't think he should be. If the Seahawks are smart and if their relationship is patched up like we think it is, then there really isn't a reason that they should. He's still, you know, an elite cornerback. I'd say still the best in the NFL. I mean, you don't hear about him as much because he's not involved in the games. And that's just him doing his job. So the Seahawks would be stupid to trade Richard Sherman. Spike, am I wrong in saying that?
I strongly agree. I thought it was an awful idea to trade him before the year. And even with the emergence of Keel Griffin and Justin Coleman, they are great second and third cornerbacks. Neither of them is a great cornerback to the level that Richard Sherman is. Richard Sherman's 29. He's got, you know, he's got more time in his legs, clearly. He's killing it this year. And we are, like, if the question is, do we extend him long term? Like, I don't, I mean, like, I probably would add, tack, you know, 2 to 3 more years onto his deal that we can't get out of. You know what I mean? Like, extend him till his age 31 or 32 season at full money without, without being able to cut him. Like, I'd be okay with that. Like, I'd rather do that than trade him. It seems like he's been, like, a good member of the team. I mean, obviously, he had that ugly hit on Mariota that led to some chippiness. But, you know, he hasn't been sparring with Chris Richard at all. Like, he has, like, he's, you know, been complimentary towards Russell Wilson in the press. Like, I don't think we need to trade him. I don't want to trade him. I hope we don't trade him. I can't imagine what we get back for him that would be as good as him. If we were planning on trading him, we should have drafted a second cornerback this year rather than like 9 safeties. Because this last season was looking like a great cornerback draft. I mean, you got Lattimore in New Orleans looking great, who obviously we couldn't have gotten. And Tre'Davious White looks great in Buffalo. Kevin King looks good in Green Bay. Keel looks great for us. Like, there have been a lot of really good corners in this draft. If you wanted to replace Richard Sherman, this last draft would have been a time to grab a second very good cornerback in order to plan for that future. But our second cornerback that we drafted is Mike Tyson. And he is not at that Witherspoon. He's not even at the Witherspoon level, much less the Tre'Davious White, Lattimore, Adoree Jackson. I mean, this was a really good corner.
It was deep,
draft.
Yeah.
So if we were, yeah.
Yeah, so another, I just cut you off right now, but another player that
you did great.
Brought up in trade talks among Seahawks Twitter is Jimmy Graham. And Evan from HawkBlogger.com asks us, does Jimmy Graham's production justify his $10 million cap hit?
Oh, boy. I mean, not
yet. I mean, there's still time.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's just like I think it's not quite the same, but it reminds me a little bit of Adrian Beltre's deal, where, like, $10 million is high. And, like, Adrian Beltre, we paid him, like, what, $60 million over 4 years in Seattle, something like that. And based on wins above replacement and what they cost at the time, Beltre was worth, like, within $100,000 of what he paid him in terms of, like, what he should get on the open market for his performance. But a lot of that was hidden value from his defensive excellence. And so it was the sort of deal where, like, it was okay, but it never felt great. And he's obviously been better everywhere else because, you know, because of his skill set, he just fit better in other parks that he played in. And I think there's something similar going on with Jimmy Graham, where he's pretty good in our system. He could be great elsewhere. Obviously, he took a major injury, and it's sort of a miracle how little time he missed, given how significant an injury was. He's made some big plays. He's also let the team down in some crucial moments in a way that you really wouldn't want from a guy you're paying $10 million to, who you gave up significant assets in order to get. Like, the answer is, like, no, but just barely. And I don't like to think of life as a binary. Like, if we were paying him $7.5 or $8 million this year, I'd be like, yeah, okay. But at $10 million, it's like, not quite. So yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Grant?
Well, like I said, I don't, like, not yet really, because there's still time in the season, and he can explode. I mean, his year last year wasn't terrible, and he had, you know, he had a season similar to New Orleans, like, minus the touchdowns, like, in terms of receiving yards. And I think if we see him being used like he was against the Rams, and maybe, you know, stretch it a little more vertically downfield, then we'll start to see the numbers pick up a little bit. But, you know, the player that you dealt for at the time and the contract that he had, I think that it was warranted then. But it remains to be seen right now. So there's time for him to kind of close the gap on it being worth it. But right now, I'm with you in saying that right now the production isn't there with how much he costs.
Yeah, it's not a good deal. Like, although I will say the Saints have already moved on from the pick they used. Like, this is not a deal that has worked out, both because of injury and because of fit. But, like, worked out means maximize the value on. Like, it's not a disaster of a deal based on what has happened. Like, it's just not great. Right, and, like, Schneider has been pretty boom or bust in terms of his deals. Like, Averill and Bennett are two of the best free agent deals in the history of the NFL in their way. And, like, the Percy Harvin trade, despite my loving him for, you know, helping us win a Super Bowl, was terrible. And Kerry Matthews, what the heck was it?
Kerry Williams was just horrible.
I don't know why I thought it was, I couldn't. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. So I don't know. Because the Graham trade just lives in the creamy middle of life that it's tough to judge in absolutes on.
Right, because the Seahawks traded for the dominant player Jimmy Graham, and they've gotten a pretty good Jimmy Graham. So in our eyes, the deal hasn't been, like, great so far. But if he returns to form, then I think we'll see a lot of people appreciating Jimmy more.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
All right, so we'll get into a player that we appreciate more than a lot of them, and that's Bobby Wagner. And Chris Wheeler asks, how many carries will Bobby Wagner get this week? That's an interesting question. We've been lobbying.
Great. Do you have an answer?
We've been lobbying to get him some carries. I don't think anybody in the Seahawks organization has been hearing this podcast, or else, you know, maybe that would be in the works. We'd start to see some rumblings in practice, but we haven't yet. So my answer is that it won't be nearly enough.
Yeah, I agree. Not enough. And I think he's a really good matchup at running back this week against a Giants team that is going to live in the Seahawks backfield. He's the sort of guy who can break tackles. That said, given that the Giants' lone competent receiving option is tight end Evan Engram, and that Orleans Darkwos sort of went off last week, we probably do need him to put all of his energy into defense, as the Giants no longer have outside threats and will be trying to do all their work in the middle of the field. So, you know, get it. I get why they aren't going to run him more, but, like, he should be getting 15 carries this weekend.
Yeah, maybe it'd be best suited for the game against the Texans, where they're without Merciless and Watt.
Yeah, great point.
So, I think we love Bobby Wagner. He's one of the best Seahawks. But we just got asked before we started to record, who is the worst Seahawk? And by a Twitter user whose name is KJ and Silent Bob.
Oh, that's Mike great. Chan, I believe. Yeah, the best handle right now out there is KJ and Silent Bob. The answer to the worst Seahawk is and always will be Jeremy Stephens. That's like the only possible answer. He's an abuser, so he's a bad person off the field. He was like a rapist at UW. Like, he's like the worst human being I've ever heard of in my entire... Like if you read that the Seattle Times book on the rot within the UW system under Rick Neuheisel, Jeremy Stephens was a villain in Seattle before he was on the Seahawks. Then he was on the Seahawks. We used a first-round pick on him, and he was terrible, and he basically cost us a Super Bowl with his drops, so he's terrible on the field. And then he keeps being terrible. I hate Jeremy Stephens. Like, he's awful, and I hate him, and he will always be the worst Seahawk to me.
All the way bad. And I 100% and totally back you.
And I realize that I'm, like, backing out of, like, who's the worst Seahawk on the team now. And it's because, like, I don't want to pick on Reese Odhiambo. He didn't ask for this.
Right.
He didn't ask to be the starting left tackle this year. He wanted to be a rotational guard. He wanted, when Luke Jokel went out, to be like, oh, he's going to get some snaps at guard this year. Like, that's what Reese Odhiambo should be. And, like, he'd be fine at that. Like, that would be fine. Like, so I don't want to put him in that worst Seahawk category, a place where guys like Jeremy Stephens live.
Yeah, exactly. Worst on the field for the Seahawks right now. It's a hard debate because we have so many bad offensive linemen.
But I
feel like this has been kind of like, for as much as we've bagged on Reese Odhiambo, like, it's been a little bit of a support group for him, I feel, too. Like, we've been very positive and encouraging to Reese. So I don't want to pick on him. I'll say, like, maybe Trevon Boykin. Can we just, like, agree on that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the crime stuff that Boykin was. It's like I don't want to bag on him because it's not the same as what Stephens did. I mean, Frank Clark's got off field issues, but he's good on the field, and he seems like a jerk. I don't like Frank Clark. I don't like pretty, but like, he's not in that Jeremy Stevens double whammy nightmare category. And right. So I just don't want, I don't want to name anybody else. I don't want to put anybody else in that conversation.
Oh yeah. I was talking like strictly on the field, like production and stuff like that.
Oh, I mean, there's, it's gotta be Odhiambo, because if Fetty has looked good, over the last couple of games, Britt and Joko were both fine. And Ibushi, I mean, Ibushi's just hasn't been the gaping nightmare that Odhiambo's been. Yeah, I mean, Odhiambo's been just terrible. But again, like, he didn't ask for this.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that, like, when he had to, was forced basically to switch to left guard, like, I would certainly freak out about that. I don't know about you. And Sham asks, at what point in the season is it fair to freak out about the Seahawks? And I'll start by saying that for as much, you know, for as much of the season that's been up and down already, it's mainly been good more than the bad. I mean, we're 3-2 right now, and it could be a lot worse. And we haven't had really any major injuries besides Carson.
And Fant.
But, like, who knows what George Fant would have been. And, like, and Chris Carson, for as much, like, for as good as he was, like, he was definitely not in the plans, like, at the start of the offseason. Yeah. So, Carson was a good, like, bonus, and Fant was still pretty much an unknown. But we don't really have any major injuries besides that. We're 3-2. We beat the Rams. And the NFC's, like I said, you know, looking pretty beat up as a whole. So, I don't think that we'll have much to freak out about unless anything happens. So I don't really have a good answer for that one, really.
Well, I'll say this. The Seahawks have won a playoff game each of the last five years. That is a crazy run. Like, that is such a good run. And frankly, they were basically live to make the Super Bowl in four of those last 5 years. Like, obviously against Atlanta, it was close. Then we won the Super Bowl. Then we lost the Super Bowl in a very close game. And the next year against the Panthers, we had Odhiambo come in and blow it. But we almost came back in that game. And the only time where really we didn't have a shot was when we had to play Atlanta without Earl Thomas. And so for me, like, basically the Seahawks have been good enough that, like, the only time you should be freaking out about them is if Russell Wilson on offense or Earl Thomas on defense gets hurt. Anything else, and I'm like, we haven't seen anything that says that the Seahawks are not a legitimate contender if Russell Wilson and Earl Thomas are on the field. So for me, like, there's really, like, and that's actually, like, a weird, interesting thing. It's like, emotionally, that means you're always bought in, and the highs are so high and the lows are so low, and you really, it's a tough team to root for in some way. I mean, it's not like if I said that to, like, a Browns fan, they'd punch me in the face. But it is the sort of thing where, like, you can't take a week off from caring because this team plays a lot of close games against bad teams but is always in it against good teams. And so, like, it's tricky. But, like, really, if Earl Thomas and Russell Wilson are suiting up in January and we are where we think we'll be, which is, like, you know, probably like 11-5. I mean, I just saw Jonathan Allen is out for the year for the Redskins, which I hate saying their name out loud. Sorry to do that. But also, they are a real threat to the Seahawks because of their pass rush, but he's out now for the season. And I'm like, wow, you look forward, J.J. Watt's out. A lot of the teams that would have posed the biggest challenges to the Seahawks are reeling. And, you know, like, 12-4 is in play. 11-5 or 10-6 and either the division or the top wildcard slot seem like the most likely outcomes for this team. And then you get in the playoffs where, again, we've won a playoff game every year. Even when Earl Thomas wasn't playing, we won a playoff game. So I'm like, you can't freak out. You just have to, like, feel all your feelings all the time, which is just hard. It's just hard.
It's mentally exhausting being a Seahawks fan. It's always life or death with everything that happens. There's so much hyperbole. Everything is, you know, in a microscope, basically. And so everything matters to the Seahawks. We're in a constant state of freaking out about everything.
Yep.
Okay. And so I guess we'll get into the weirdness. No, we have one. And I'm not saying, like, these questions aren't normal or anything. So, Spike, don't just jump at me yet.
Hey, I'm fine.
All right, cool. So, like, we're making sure we're cool and measured right now. We have one more question like this. So we get asked, Sean Scott says, aren't you dying to see the Seahawks throwback uniforms? And I'll start by saying, yes, I think that there's Nike's really capable of making it look really good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not disappointed that we haven't seen it yet, but just like, I'm just like waiting to see it because I know it can be done so well. And I think like as simple as those uniforms were, they look so clean. And like, I have a couple throwback jerseys myself, and they're my favorite to wear. I just think that they're classic and they just look good however you wear them. And so I think that, and when it's done, it'll look good, and I'm hoping it soon.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, the Rams have gotten a lot of praise for their throwbacks, and they're right to. And I think the Seahawks shouldn't let the Rams take another step. You know, they've already got the offensive innovator in Sean McVay. They can't get ahead of us in the uniform battle as well.
Right, exactly. Now, Sean McVay is really good, and the Rams uniforms are really good. But I'll go on a limb saying Pete Carroll is better. So we really have to go two for two in that situation.
I agree.
Okay, so
now but we've got one more normal, or we've got sort of two more normal ones we're going to
together. Yeah.
The offensive line questions, which are from Corky Knievel, and then there are a couple others. Who were those other two from?
The other two are from, these were actually the first questions that we got. So I want to send a thank you to Jared Westby.
Okay. Yeah, so we got sort of a bunch of Tom Cable questions. Does Tom Cable refuse to have talented veterans, or do talented veterans refuse to play for Tom Cable? Is Tom Cable a bad O-line coach, or is the talent as bad as we hear? And is the screen pass just not in Hawks playbook? Our O-line seems like they could sell it so well on every play because they're cutting five times. That isn't in the question, but that's... man... I'll say this, like, we've invested a lot of draft capital in offensive linemen, and man, but like Luke Jokel and George Fant being out for the next few weeks is like things not going to plan in a pretty significant way. But also, like, you got to be able to see that coming, and teams like Green Bay have been able to deal with it, you know? So I don't know. And I'm like a little higher on Ifedi, but that just means I don't think he's terrible. I think he's not good, but he's not terrible. So I think we've put enough draft resources at offensive line that we should be better. We haven't thrown a lot of like capital at the problem, but we've thrown some money at Luke Jokel, and we could have thrown money at TJ Lang. I don't think it would have fixed the issue. You know, we've got a decent center. Like, it's, I think that I wish Tom Cable weren't the coach, because A, he's got a terrible history, and B, he is not great. But I was this is all to say, I was listening to, I think it was Andy Benoit's podcast. I know he just underrated Russell Wilson again, so he's not the most popular guy on Seahawks Twitter. But he made a point about like our offensive lines, about accentuating the strength of your offensive linemen or minimizing their weaknesses. Tom Cable seems to be an all-in on accentuating the strengths. Like, he wants guys pulling off crazy cuts and crazy combo blocks and pulling across four linemen, you know, like all this crazy stuff. And it's like, I wish he would be willing to be a little more conservative sometimes in his blocking schemes, because he's not generating a run game right now and he's getting his quarterback murdered. And so it feels like the wrong match of personality and the coach with offensive line talent, as much as it is them being objectively bad.
Right, and we touched on this before on a different podcast, that if we were to get rid of Tom Cable and keep the offensive line, or get rid of the offensive line and keep Tom Cable, what would happen? And you kind of want to see what would happen with a different coach, but like, you don't know if it's just a bad crop of talent. And I feel like the Seahawks, you know, throughout the drafts in the past, you know, 5-6 years, have invested so much in young offensive linemen. And I feel like they just keep going for these young offensive linemen to get that group that can gel and be that, you know, consistent group on the team, like, that plays for, like, 7 or 8 years. And, like, it's just not a point that you have to worry. And they've been going for that and going for that and keep striking out and keep, you know, getting these linemen that can't, you know, run block or pass block or block at all, and you keep having to patch it up and do work to replace them, and you can't get that consistency in these young players. And I don't know if that's, you know, on the personnel that the Seahawks drafted or how they're coaching them up. So it's hard to say if they want, if they refuse to have talented veterans too.
Well,
like,
that,
like,
well,
they had Evans and they cut him.
Yeah.
And like, he's doing well for the Packers, obviously. And then they missed out on Lang. They missed out on Whitworth, who are both having great years in their respective teams.
And also Russell Okung's having a great year.
Right. And who could, they could have got him on a like a relatively cheap deal. He was representing himself, and yeah. Like, and this is not a slight at Russell Okung at all, but he's not an NFL agent. And
yeah.
So they could have gotten like a pretty lucrative deal for them.
Yeah. All right. I think we covered the offensive line.
Right.
Let's get weird.
All right, Spike, I'll let you bring us into the weirdness.
Okay, well, the first question we got from Zach Malm is, why in the world would Din Tai Fung open a stand at CenturyLink but not sell the garlic green beans? And this is a great question, because Din Tai Fung, we've got it in California. They got up in Seattle. It opened there while I was living up there still. I love Din Tai Fung. I go regularly to the location in Glendale now. Went to the one in New Village when I was up in Seattle. Great, great soup dumplings. And they're known for their soup dumplings. And the soup dumplings are great. But if you're going to Din Tai Fung and you're not getting the garlic green beans, you're not living your life to the fullest. So I get it. And I don't know the answer. I mean, probably the answer is they're doing a lot of steaming. You know, you can get those steamer baskets going. You can quickly get out those dumpling situations. And in order to do the garlic green bean, you really need a hot wok. You need like a wok burner. So you need to be getting that wok, like the surface temperature on it, up to like really high temperatures that might be deemed unsafe. Might also smoke if you get the wrong oil and you don't want smoking in the stadium. So that might be the risk. It might be about the heat that you need in order to properly nail those garlic green beans in a wok fry situation.
Okay, so that went really in-depth, somewhere I didn't think it was going. So Spike is just navigating through the weirdness perfectly.
Yeah.
Myself, I didn't know what Din Tai Fung was before this podcast, so you can roast me if you want. But I'd say listen to Spike. I mean, the Seahawks usually start their games at...
Grant, you got to come out to Glendale, man. We'll get some Din Tai Fung. You can enjoy it. It's real good. Well,
yeah,
I'm blast.
We can record right from the restaurant. But
The
Seahawks play their games at 1 p.m. most days, and they have primetime games. So you have the whole day to get your garlic green beans on. So
that's
maybe
true.
Maybe take care of that pregame and then get your soup dumplings, you know, when you're at the C-Link.
I mean, all right, that's not a bad point. This one from Liam Pierce is wild. Should I go as a lantern-jawed wolf this Halloween to celebrate Kim Jong-un's diss of John Kerry? I don't know what this has to do with the Seahawks, frankly, and I worked for the John Kerry campaign, not to make this about politics, but that's something I did back in 2004 when Grant was 3 years old or something.
I was 7 years old.
Oh, my God. I was in college. Like, I'm not that old, but like, oh my God. So I'm a John Kerry supporter. It is a good burn by Kim Jong-un, for sure. Good burn, solid burn.
You always have to recognize the good burns. Like,
but
no matter
I don't know if it's worth it for your Halloween costume to push all in on repping Kim Jong-un. Like, I wouldn't do that.
That seems...
Kim Jong-un, a lot of human rights violations, not a good guy.
Generally not a good guy.
I said a lot of things about Jeremy Stevens. I'd say Kim Jong-un is maybe worse than Jeremy Stevens, so don't lean into that for your Halloween costume.
Yeah, I mean, and like in terms of this podcast, they're neck and neck in like the bad guy rankings.
Yeah, exactly.
So
don't
get
out there.
And like me being the costume expert that I was, I mean, I was nominated for like most spirited in high school, so I'll bring that up like
great.
As like just to boast about my accomplishments, but I feel like that's just really particular, and you're going to have a lot of people, like...
A lot of
like,
explaining.
What are you going for? And that's exhausting, frankly. So, like, maybe go something, like, easier, like, I don't know, like David S. Pumpkins. It's David Pumpkins, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I will say my buddy, the best Halloween costume I've ever seen was my buddy, Jubin, went as Gentrification.
Nice.
And he wore bags on his shoes, jeans, a button-down shirt, and then a top hat and monocle. And that was, I mean, he had to explain it all night, but it was a really good costume.
I'd say that's worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's clever. Like, because once you explain what a lantern-jawed wolf is, you then have to explain why you're doing it, and you can only afford one explanation. You either have to be very clearly what you are, and then the answer is why, or the question is like, oh, what is this? And when you explain it, people go, oh, you can't have two explanations necessary. That's the problem with your costume. And yeah. Also, Kim Jong-un has a lot of human rights violations. So right. And those are the two big problems.
And I feel like labeling Kim Jong-un as your inspiration for your costume is just not a good look.
Not great. I mean, look, not great. I'm not I don't want to dive too deep into politics. Because, like, I have some, you know, whatever. Lots of people agree with me. Lots of people don't, whatever. But Kim Jong-un not being great is something that I think we can all agree on.
He's universally bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that our last question?
Well, or I was just going to drop that one year I was Bruce Banner, like, immediately after he hulked down.
Oh, so you were naked?
Or, basically, like pants? I had just, like, cut-up shorts and, like, a cut-up t-shirt and, like, it was something, like, fairly easily, and people were like, oh, like, good costume. Like,
yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, so I'll post a little more.
I've never had, like, a great costume. I did a solid couples costume with my girlfriend last year of Bob and Linda from Bob's Burgers. Great nice. Show. Yeah, to Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers, like, if we can, like, get something, like, with a show, like, that'd be great. Like,
I will Burgers, say that I got
Bob's Burgers is universally great, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Shout out to Bento Box Productions, where my buddy Duncan is currently working on the David S. Pumpkins animated special.
There we go.
That they just announced. So, you know, shout out to Bento Box. If they want to sponsor the Lockdown Seahawks podcast, we will gratefully promote Bob's Burgers, although we're already doing it.
Yeah, so, this is the free sample.
Yeah. You want the good stuff, you're going to have to come back and give us some money, Bento Box Productions.
Yeah, but I think I have a picture of myself floating around the internet like dressed as Hey Arnold last year.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have range in our costumes. Mainly animated characters. But we have range.
And, all right.
Yeah, so one last note, yeah.
Oh, I will say more?
We got some questions on Twitter, but if you go to iTunes and leave your Twitter handle in a 5-star review, you will be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership, and you'll have access to all the numbers, all the stats, and you'll be the coolest guy in the room. So so go ahead and do that, because it seems like a good idea. Like, we've had some good ideas on this podcast.
If you leave a question in there, we'll probably answer it. I don't want to get in a situation where I promise we'll answer it, but we'll probably answer it.
If it's not related to the leader of North Korea, we'll probably answer it.
Even if, we
answered it.
We might, yeah.
So you can venture out there. I think we got a little weird. We can get weirder. I've experienced the wild side that Spike's been bringing up over the past couple weeks, and I kind of like it. So you've done your job there, Spike.
Yeah.
All right. I think this has been Locked On Seahawks. I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.